In your front whene'er I woo her, yet she's vexed if I give over. But what she fears I should undo her, much more to lose her lover.
The Double Dealer by William Congreve.
And not winning.
With Robin Bailey and Sheila Gish as Lord and Lady Touchwood, and Clive Swift and Penelope Wilton as Sir Paul and Lady Pliant. The action takes place in the house and grounds of Lord Touchwood.
Pretty Cynthia, look behind you. Pretty Cynthia, look behind you. Age and wrinkles will o'ertake you. Then too late, desire will find you. When the gods are forsake you. Think of a sad condition. To be past, yet wish fruition. To be past, yet wish fruition. Yet wish fruition.
My darling nephew, Mellifont, Cynthia, his sweetest betrothed, your promised hour is come at last. Tomorrow, you'll be wed. Already I am worn with cares and age.
Oh, my dear.
But you are in the bloom of youth. In you, all the beauties of this age we see. And that we cannot envy, because we love you.
Yes, indeed.
Unwearied nights and wishing days attend you both, Cynthia and Mellifont.
Cynthia!
Musicians, play on.
Cynthia.
My dear Mellifont.
But one day more.
I hardly dare believe it. With me into the garden.
My sweet.
A moment alone, and it's the prettiest night.
We'll do it, I swear. But first, I have
Cynthia,
a little business.
My bliss.
Lady Broth.
Would you join me in a dish of tea?
Madam, a tete-a-tete. Sit you.
Let me die, but there's yet a volume to impart about my love for my lord. Mr. Mellifont, I'm sure, would not deprive you.
Your servant, my lady.
Have I told you, my joy, about the verse that leapt from my mouth the night before my wedding?
No, madam.
My boy!
Oh, Sir Paul!
Gadsbud, I swear I'm almost tipsy. I find champagne is powerful. Well, sure as can be. So then, my boy, tomorrow I may call you son.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, yes.
Mellifont.
Oh,
Mr. Brisk.
You have amputated yourself from the body of our society.
Have I?
Oh, my dear boy, let me perish if thou art not the soul of conversation.
Mr. Brisk, I swear and vow you're a most facetious person and the best company.
Go for it. Mr. Careless. Mr. Careless, whither so fast?
I'm weary of guzzling.
Careless, a word.
You're always spoiling company by leaving it.
Thou art always spoiling company by coming into it.
I know you envy me.
Oh, gentlemen, excuse me, but I have a little business with Mr. Careless. If you'll but remain and keep up the good humour and sense, we'll return immediately.
Oh, monk.
But three words.
Gad, Mr. Brisk, let's hit Lord Froth in the teeth with a quibble. His lordship's laugh after so becoming.
Egad, so he shall. But prithee, dear Rhodes, make haste, I shall burst out.
Heard coxcomb.
Follow me.
Must a man endure the noise of words without sense?
I have something to say to you in private, and I'm not like to have many opportunities this evening.
What is?
Careless, I am suspicious of a plot.
A plot?
By whom? My Lady Touchwood.
Your aunt?
Yes.
But I thought your fear of her had been over. And tomorrow you marry Cynthia. Her father, Sir Paul, is here to settle the writings this very evening.
True, but you shall judge whether I have not reason to be alarmed. None besides you and Maskwell are acquainted with the secret of my Aunt Touchwood's violent passion for me. Since my first refusal of her, she has endeavoured to do me all ill offices with my uncle, yet has managed them with that subtlety that to him they have borne the face of kindness, whilst her malice, like a dark lantern, only shone upon me. I had hoped her designs had terminated in view of my marriage with Cynthia, but this morning she surprised me in my bed.
Well, bless us! What followed?
What at first amazed me, for I looked to have seen her in all the transports of a slighted and revengeful woman. But when I expected thunder from her voice and lightning in her eyes, I saw her melted into tears and hushed into a sigh. She omitted nothing that the most violent love could urge, or tender words express, which, when she saw, had no effect. Then came the storm I feared at first, for starting from my bedside like a fury, she flew to my sword, and with much ado I prevented her doing me or herself a mischief. Having disarmed her, in a gust of passion she left me, and in a resolution confirmed by a thousand curses, not to close her eyes till she had seen my ruin.
But what the devil, does she think thou hast no more sense than to get an heir upon her body to disinherit thyself? For as I take it, this settlement upon you is with a proviso that your uncle have no children.
Indeed, it is so. If my aunt is with child, I am left nothing.
Oh, exquisite woman!
She must be prevented. We must keep her head from working for the rest of this evening, for I tell you, hell is not more busy than her brain. I will observe my uncle, and you must engage my future mother-in-law, Lady Pliant, that my aunt may not poison her mind against the marriage. Lord Froth and his wife will be sufficiently taken up with admiring one another, and Brisk with admiring himself. As for my aunt, Jack Maskwell has promised to watch her narrowly and give me notice upon any suspicion.
So you have manned your works, but I fear you may have the weakest guard where the enemy is strongest.
Maskwell, you mean?
You know I never liked him.
Prithee, why should you suspect him? He has obligations of gratitude to bind him to me. His dependence upon my uncle is through my means.
Oh, upon your aunt, you mean?
My aunt?
I'm mistaken. If there be not a familiarity between them, you do not suspect.
Only to do me service. He endeavours to be well in her esteem that he may be able to effect it.
Well, I shall be glad to be mistaken. But your aunt's revenge cannot be any way so effectually shown as in bringing forth a child to disinherit you. And Maskwell is flesh and blood at best.
Lads! Lads! Here they are, my Lord Frock. We can no longer abide your absence. The deuce take me if there were three good things said, all one understood, since thy departure.
We were just returning.
And his lordship is in so merry a mood.
Merry? Oh, barbarous, I'd as lief you called me fool.
Nay, I protest and vow now, 'tis true. Your lordship's laugh does so become you.
You're strangely mistaken. I assure you I laugh at nobody's jest but my own.
How, my lord? Do I never say anything worthy to be laughed at?
Oh, don't misapprehend me, for I often smile at your conceptions, but there is nothing more unbecoming a man of quality than to laugh.
But does your lordship never see comedies?
Oh, yes, sometimes, but I never laugh.
Then what do you go there for?
To mortify the poets. The fellows grow so conceited when any of their foolish wit prevails. I swear I have often constrained my inclinations to laugh, to avoid giving them encouragement.
You are cruel to yourself, my lord, as well as malicious to them.
I confess I did myself some violence at first, but now I think I have conquered it.
I'm sorry for some friends of mine that write, but let me perish. I love to be malicious. Nay, deuce take me, there's wit in't, too.
Where the devil's the wit in not laughing when a man has a mind to it?
But 'tis there in the not laughing. Don't you apprehend me? Nay, prithee, careless, be instructed. Suppose you come up to me laughing as if you would bepiss yourself, and I look grave and ask the cause of this immoderate mirth. Then you tell me some very witty
pretty thing laughing all the while as if you were ready to die. And still I look grave with not so much as a smile. Would not you be disappointed?
No, for if it were a witchy thing, I should not expect you to understand it.
Oh, foy, Mr. Careless. All the world allows Mr. Brisk to have wit. My wife says he has a great deal. I hope you think her a judge.
Let him alone, Brisk. He is obstinately bent not to be instructed.
I'm sorry for him, deuce take me.
Shall we go to the ladies, my lord?
With all my heart. Methinks we are a solitude without them. Come, gentlemen. Hello.
I'll hear no more. You're false and ungrateful. Come, Moss, well, I know you false.
I have been frail, I confess, Lady Touchwood, on your behalf.
That I should trust a man whom I had known betray his friend.
What friend have I betrayed? And to whom?
Your fond friend, Mellipont. And to me. Can you deny it?
I do not.
Have you not wronged my lord, who has been a father to you in your wants, and given you being? Have you not wronged him in the highest manner, in his bed?
With your ladyship's help and for your service, as I told you before, I can't deny that neither. Anything more, madam?
More, audacious villain! Oh, what's more is most my shame. Have you not dishonored me?
No, that I deny, for I never told in all my life. So that accusation's answered, on to the next.
Death to you, dally with my passion! Insolent devil! But have a care, provoke me not. For by the eternal fire you shall not escape my vengeance. Calm, villain! How unconcerned he stands, confessing treachery and ingratitude. Oh, I have excuses, thousands for my faults, but a sedate, a thinking villain whose black blood runs temperately bad what excuse can clear.
Will you be in temper, madam? I would not talk not to be heard. I have been a very great rogue for your sake, and you reproach me with it. I am ready to be a rogue still to do you service, and you are flinging conscience and honor in my face to rebate my inclination.
Well,
how am I to behave myself? You know I am your creature, my life and fortune in your power. To disoblige you brings me certain ruin. Allow it, I would betray you. But I would not be a traitor to myself. I don't pretend to honesty because you know I am a rascal, but I would convince you of the necessity of my being firm to you.
Necessity? Impudence! Can no gratitude incline you? No obligations touch you? Have not my fortune and my person been subjected to your pleasure? Were you not in the nature of a servant? And have I not in effect made you lord of all, of me and of my lord? Where is that humble love, that adoration which once was paid me?
Fixed, rooted in my heart, whence nothing can remove them, yet you...
Yet? What yet?
Nay, misconceive me not, madam, when I say I have had a generous and a faithful passion, which you have never favored, but through revenge and policy.
Ha!
Look you, madam, we are alone. Pray contain yourself and hear me. You know you loved your nephew, Mellipont, when I first sighed for you. I quickly found it out, and the discovery made me bold, for by it I thought you in my power. Your nephew's scorn of you added to my hopes. I watched the occasion and took you, just repulsed by him, warm at once with love and indignation. How I have loved you since, words have not shown. Then how should words express?
And have I not met your love with forward fire?
Your zeal, I grant, was ardent, but misplaced. There was revenge in view. A son and heir would have edged young Mellipont upon the brink of ruin, and left him none but you to catch at for prevention.
Again provoke me! Do you wind me like a larum for your diversion?
I am gone if you relapsed. What needs this? I say nothing but what yourself in open hours of love have told me. Why should you deny it? Nay, how can you? Is not all this present heat owing to the same fire? Do you not love him still?
Oh.
How have I this day offended you but in not breaking off the match with Cynthia? Which ere tomorrow shall be done, had you but patience.
How? What said you, Maskwell? Another caprice to unwind my temper?
By heaven, no. I am your slave, the slave of all your pleasures, and will not rest till I have given you peace. Would you suffer me?
Oh, Maskwell, thou knowest me. Knowest the very inmost windings and recesses of my soul. Mellipont! I burn. Married tomorrow. Despair strikes me. Yet I know I hate him too. Let him but once be mine, and next immediate ruin seize him.
You shall enjoy and ruin him too. Will that please you?
How? How, that dear, that precious villain, how?
You have already been tampering with my Lady Plant.
I have. She is ready for any impression I think fit.
She must be thoroughly persuaded that Mellifont loves her.
She is so credulous that she'll believe it faster than I can persuade her. But I don't see what you can propose from such a trifling design. For her first conversing with Mellifont will convince her of the contrary.
I don't depend upon it. But it will prepare something else and gain us leisure to lay a stronger plot. Oh. 1 minute gives invention to destroy. What to rebuild will a whole age employ.
Indeed, madam. Is it possible your ladyship could have been so much in love?
I could not sleep. I did not sleep 1 wink for 3 weeks together.
Prodigious. I wonder one to sleep in so much love did not turn your brain.
My dear Cynthia, I wonder too. But then I had a way, for between you and I had whimsies and vapours, but I gave them vent.
How, pray, madam?
Oh, I writ abundantly. Do you never write?
Write? What?
Songs, elegies, satires, encomiums, panegyrics, lampoons, plays, or heroic poems.
Oh, Lord, not I, madam. I'm content to be a courteous reader.
Oh, inconsistent. In love and not write? If my lord and I had been both of your temper, we had never come together. Oh, bless me! What a sad thing would that have been if my lord and I should never have met! For sure, my Lord Froth is as fine a gentleman and as much a man of quality.
Ah, nothing at all of the common air.
I think I may say he wants nothing but a blue ribbon and a star to make him shine the very phosphorus of our hemisphere.
Do you understand those two hard words? If you don't, I'll explain them to you.
Yes, madam, I'm not so ignorant.
Nay, I beg your pardon, but being derived from the Greek, I thought you might have escaped the etymology. But I am the more amazed to find you a woman of letters and not write.
Bless me, how can Mellifont believe you love him?
My faith, madam, he that won't take my word shall never have it under my hand.
I vow he's pretty, but methinks he wants a manner.
A manner, madam?
Some distinguishing quality. As, for example, the bel air or brillant of Mr. Brisk. The solemnity yet complacence of my lord. Or something of his own that should look a little je ne sais quoi-ish. He's too much a mediocrity in my mind.
He does not indeed affect either pertness or formality, for which I like him. Here he comes.
And my lord and Mr. Brisk with him.
Pray, observe the difference.
My lord, I have been telling Cynthia how much I have been in love with you. I swear I have. I'm not ashamed to own it. Ah, it makes my heart leap. I vow I sigh when I think on't. My dear lord. Do you remember, my lord?
Pleasant creature, perfectly well. Ah, that look, there it is. Who could resist? 'Twas so my heart was made a captive first, and ever since 'tis been in love with happy slavery.
Oh, that tongue, that dear, deceitful tongue. Mr. Brisk, you're a judge. Was ever anything so well bred as my lord?
Never anything, but your ladyship let me perish.
Oh, prettily turned again. Let me die, but you have a great deal of wit. Mr. Mellifont, don't you think Mr. Brisk has a world of wit?
Oh, yes, madam.
Oh, lord, madam.
An infinite deal?
Oh, excuse you, madam.
More wit than anybody.
I'm everlastingly your humble servant. Do you see me, madam?
Madam, don't you think us a happy couple?
The happiest in the world, my lord, for you are not only happy when you are together, but happy by yourselves.
Yeah. I hope Mellifont will make a good husband, too.
'Tis my interest to believe he will, my lord.
Do you think he'll love you as well as I do? My wife, I'm afraid not.
I believe he'll love me better.
Heavens! That can never be. But why do you think so?
Because he has not so much reason to be fond of himself.
Oh, you're
your humble servant. And then, dear madam, well, Mellifont, you'll be a happy creature.
Aye, my lord.
My lord was telling me your ladyship has made an essay toward an heroic poem.
Did my lord tell you? Yes, I thought. And the subject is my lord's love to me. And what do you think I call it? I dare swear you won't guess. The Silly Bob.
Because my lord's title's froth again. Do take me very apropos and surprising.
Hey, aye, is not it? And then I call my lord Spumoso. And myself, what do you think I call myself?
Lactilla, maybe? Gad, I cannot tell.
Biddy, that's all. Just my own name.
Biddy, Gad. Very pretty. Deuce take me, if your ladyship has not the art of surprising the most naturally in the world. I hope you'll make me happy in communicating the poem.
Oh, you must be my confidant. I must ask your advice.
I'm your humble servant, let me perish.
My lord, you must not be jealous. I'm communicating all to Mr. Brisk.
No, no, I'll allow Mr. Brisk. Have you nothing about you to show him, my dear?
Yes, I believe I have. Mr. Brisk. Come, will you go into the next room, and there I'll show you all I have.
I'll walk a turn in the garden.
Cynthia.
It's an odd game we're going to play at.
Do you think so?
Marriage makes man and wife one flesh, but can still leave them two fools.
That's only when two fools meet.
Nay, I have known two wits meet, and by the opposition of their wit, render themselves as ridiculous as fools.
Hang it, we've shuffled and cut. Let's turn up trumps.
But if it's like cards, it'll be an accident of fortune if either of us have a good hand.
No, marriage is rather like a game of bowls. Fortune, indeed, makes the match, and the two nearest and sometimes the two farthest are together, but the game depends entirely upon judgment.
Still, it is a game, so one of us must be a loser.
Not at all. Only a friendly trial of skill, and the winnings to be shared between us.
Gads!
It's my father.
Sir Paul, have patience.
And your stepmother?
I provoked into a fermentation.
Bless me, what makes him in such a passion?
Let me alone to rattle him up.
Pray, your ladyship, give me leave to be angry. I'll rattle him up, I warrant you.
I never saw him thus before.
Will you be pleased to retire, and then
I'll... No, marry, will I not be pleased. I'm pleased to be angry. That's my pleasure at this time.
What can this mean?
Gad's my life, the man's distracted. Why, how now? Who are you? What am I? Slidikins, can't I govern you? What did I marry you for? Am I not to be absolute and uncontrollable?
I'm not to be governed at all times. When I'm in tranquillity, my lady client shall command, Sir Paul. But when I'm provoked to fury, I cannot incorporate with patience and reason.
It is in vain to talk to you, you disobedient, headstrong brute.
It is because I won't be headstrong, because I won't be a brute and have my head fortified, that I'm thus exasperated, but I will protect my honour, and yonder is the violator of my fame.
Bless me!
It is my honour that is concerned, and the violation was intended to me. Your honour? You have none, but what is in my keeping, and I can dispose of it when I please. Therefore, don't provoke me.
Catsbud, she says true. Well, my lady, march on. I will fight under you then.
Inhuman and treacherous.
Thou serpent and first tempter of womankind.
Sir, madam, what mean you?
Cynthia, Cynthia, come away, Cynthia. Touch him not, girl, go not near him. There's nothing but deceit about him. Snakes are in his peruke and the crocodile of Nilus in his belly. He will eat thee up alive.
For heaven's sake. Dishonorable, impudent creature.
Madam, to whom do you direct this language?
Have I behaved myself with all the decorum and nicety befitting the person of Sir Paul's wife? Have I preserved my honour, as it were, in a snow-white house for this 3 year past? Have I been white and unsullied even by Sir Paul himself?
Nay, she's been an impenetrable wife even to me. That's the truth, hon.
Have I preserved myself like a fair sheet of paper for you to make a blot upon?
And she shall make a simile with any woman in England.
I'm so amazed I know not what to speak.
Well, do you think my daughter Gadsbud a wife for a cherubim? Do you think her fit for nothing but to stand before you while you take aim at my wife?
Hell of damnation, this is my aunt's doing.
Sir Paul, take Cynthia from his sight. Leave me to strike him with the remorse of his intended crime.
Pray, sir, stay. Hear him. I dare affirm he's innocent.
Innocent? Why, harky, I had it from his aunt, Miss Sister Touchwood. Gadsbud does not care a farthing for anything of thee but thy portion. Why, he's in love with my wife, with your stepmother. He would have
tantalized thee and made a cuckold of thy poor father, and that would certainly have broke my heart. But Providence has prevented all. Therefore, come away when I bid you.
I must obey. Oh, such a thing. To wrong so fair a creature. 'Tis a barbarity of barbarities.
How? Which way was I to wrong her? For yet I understand you not.
Why, gads my life, Mellifont, you cannot be so peremptory as to deny it when I tax you with it to your face.
By heaven, I love her more than life.
Fiddle faddle, don't tell me of this and that and everything in the world, but give me mathemacular demonstration. Oh, the unparalleled wickedness. How could you think to reverse nature so, to make the daughter the means of procuring the mother?
The daughter to procure the mother?
Aye! For though I am not Cynthia's own mother, I am her father's wife, and that's near enough to make it incest.
Incest? Oh, my precious aunt and the devil in conjunction!
Oh, reflect upon the horror of that. Marrying the daughter, then seducing me, perverting me from the road of virtue in which I have trod thus long and never made one trip. Oh, consider what you would have had to answer for if you should provoke me to frailty. Alas, humanity is feeble, heaven knows, very feeble, and unable to support itself.
Madam.
And nobody knows how circumstances may happen together. To my thinking now, I could resist the strongest temptation, but yet I know 'tis impossible for me to know whether I could or not. There's no certainty in the things of this life.
Madam, pray give me leave to ask you one question.
Oh, Lord! Ask me the question. I swear I'll refuse it. I swear I'll deny it. Therefore, don't ask me. Nay, you shan't ask me. Oh, Gemini, you brought all the blood to my face. I warrant I'm as red as a turkey cock.
Now, madam, hear me.
Hear you? No, no. I'll deny you first and hear you afterwards. For one does not know how one's mind may change upon hearing. I won't trust my honour, I assure you. My honour is infallible and uncomeatable.
For heaven's sake.
How can you talk of heaven and have so much wickedness in your heart? Maybe you don't think it a sin. They say some of you gentlemen don't. Maybe it is no sin to them that don't think it so. Indeed, if I did not think it a sin. But still, my honour, if it were no sin. But then, to marry my daughter for the conveniency of frequent opportunities, I'll never consent to that. As sure as can be, I'll break the match.
Death and amazement? Madam, upon my knees.
Nay, rise up. Nobody can help his passion. 'Tis not your fault, nor I swear it is not mine. How can I help it if I have charms? And how can you help it if you are made a captive? I swear it's a pity. It should be a fault. But my honour. Oh, Lord, here's somebody coming. I dare not stay. You must consider of your crime and strive against it. But don't despair. But never think I'll grant you anything. Oh, Lord, no. Be sure you lay aside all thoughts of marriage, for though I know you don't love Cynthia, only as a blind for your passion to me, yet it'll make me jealous. Oh, Lord, what did I say? Jealous? No, I can't be jealous, for I must not love you. Therefore, don't hope. But don't despair, neither. Oh, I must fly.
So then, spite of my care and foresight, I am caught. Yet this was but a shallow artifice, unworthy of my Machiavellian aunt. This is but the first flash, the priming of her engine. Destruction follows hard, if not most presently prevented. Marsquell, welcome. Thy presence is a view of land appearing to my shipwrecked hopes. The witch has raised the storm and her ministers have done their work. You see, the vessels are parted.
I know it. I met Sir Paul towing away Cynthia. Come, trouble not your head. I'll join you together ere tomorrow morning or drown between you in the attempt. Cheer up. Why, you don't know that while I plead for you, your aunt has given me a retaining fee. Nay, I am your greatest enemy and she does but journey work under me.
How's this?
What do you think of my being employed in the execution of all her plots? By heaven, it's true. I have undertaken to break the match. I have undertaken to make your uncle disinherit you, to get you turned out of doors. I can't tell you for laughing. Oh, she has opened her heart to me. I am to turn you a grazing and to marry Cynthia myself. There's a plot for you.
Oh, I see my sun rising.
Light breaks through clouds upon me, and I shall live in day. Oh, my Maskwell, how shall I thank or praise thee? Thou hast outwitted woman. But tell me, how couldst thou thus get into her confidence?
I pretended to have been secretly in love with Cynthia. That convinced your aunt I might be trusted, since it was as much my interest as hers to break the match. Then she thought my jealousy might qualify me to assist her in her revenge, and in short, in that belief, told me the secrets of her heart. At length we made this agreement. If I accomplish her designs, she has engaged to put Cynthia with all her fortune into my power.
She is most gracious in her favour. Well, and dear Jack, how hast thou contrived?
I would not have you stay to hear it now, for she may come this way. I am to meet her anon. After that, I'll tell you the whole matter. Be here in this gallery an hour hence.
I will. Till then, success attend thee.
Till then, success will attend me. For when I meet you, I meet the only obstacle to my fortune. Cynthia, let thy beauty gild my crimes, and whatsoever I commit of treachery or deceit shall be imputed to me as a merit. Treachery. What treachery? Love cancels all the bonds of friendship and sets men right upon their first foundations. Oh, 'tis such a pleasure to angle for fair-faced fools. That hungry gudgeon credulity will bite at anything. I have the same face, the same words and accents when I speak what I do think and when I speak what I do not think. The very same. And dear, dissimulation is the only art not to be known from nature. Why will mankind be fools and be deceived? And why friends and lovers' oaths believed, when each who searches strictly his own mind may so much fraud and power of baseness find?
My lord, can you blame my brother Pliant if he refuse his daughter upon this provocation?
Oh, 'tis nonsense. 'Tis not the first time my lady Pliant has mistaken respect for love. This is a little trick wrought by some pitiful contriver, envious of my nephew's merit.
Nay, my lord, it may be so, and I hope it will be found so. I am willing to believe as favourably of my nephew as I can.
I don't know that.
Don't you believe me, say you, my lord?
I confess I am troubled to find you so cold in his defence.
Bless me, would you have me defend an old thing?
You believe it, then?
I don't know. I am very unwilling to speak my thoughts in anything that may be to Mellifont's disadvantage, but 'tis a pain any longer to dissemble. I own it to you. In short, I do believe it. Nay, I can believe anything worse if it were laid to his charge. Don't ask me my reasons, my lord, for they are not fit to be told you.
Not fit to be told me, madam.
Good, my lord, don't press me.
Don't oblige me to press you.
Whatever it was, 'tis past. Let me beg you rest satisfied.
When you've told me, I will.
You won't.
By my life, my dear, I will. No more trifling. I charge you, tell me by all our mutual peace to come.
Nay, my lord, you need say no more. Compose yourself. It is not a concern to make you lose 1 minute's temper. It is not indeed, my dear. Nay, by this kiss, you shan't be angry.
Well.
But will you promise me not to be angry? Nay, you must not be angry with Mellifont. I dare swear he's sorry.
For what? Death, you rack me with delay.
Nay, no great matter, only... Well, I have your promise. Only, your nephew had a mind to amuse himself sometimes with a little gallantry towards me. Nay, I can't think he meant anything seriously, but methought it looked oddly.
What do I hear?
Oh, maybe he thought he was not another kin to me, and had a mind to make himself a closer relation. A lover, you know, my lord. Well, now you have it. Remember your promise. Don't take any notice of it to him.
No. Damnation.
Then I swear you must not. A little harmless mirth. And if 'twere more, 'tis over now. For my part, I have forgot it. And so has he. I hope. For I have not heard anything from him these 2 days.
2 days? Is it so fresh? A natural villain.
Death, I'll have him stripped and turned naked out of my doors this moment and let him rot and perish in an incestuous brute.
Oh, for heaven's sake, my lord, you'll ruin me if you take such public notice of it.
Ungrateful monster. How long?
Lord, I don't know. I wish my lips had grown together when I told you. Almost a 12 months. I won't tell you any more to you while yourself. Pray, my lord, don't let the company see you in this disorder. Oh, who would have thought my nephew could have so misconstrued my kindness? Go into your closet and recover. I'll make an excuse of sudden business to the company and come to you. Dear my lord, let me beg you do now. I'll come immediately and tell you all.
I am mute with wonder.
Go now.
I would hear more of this.
I follow instantly. So,
a masterpiece.
Have you seen Mellifont?
I have, and I'm to meet him here about this time.
How does he bear his disappointment?
Secure in my assistance, he seemed not much afflicted. Yet he is apprehensive of some farther design of yours, and has engaged me to watch you. I believe he will hardly be able to prevent your plot, yet I would have you use caution and expedition.
Expedition, indeed, for all we do must be performed in the remaining part of this evening, and before the company break up.
What think you of mentioning me?
How?
To my lord. As having been privy to Mellifont's design upon you, but still using my utmost endeavours to dissuade him.
To what end is this?
It will confirm my lord's opinion of my honour and honesty, and create in him a new confidence in me, which will be necessary, should this design miscarry, to forming another plot.
I'll tell him you hindered Mellifont once from forcing me.
Excellent. Your ladyship has a most improving fancy. You had best go to my lord. Keep him as long as you can in his closet, and I doubt not that you will mould him to what you please.
We'll meet at 8 in my chamber, and there rejoice at our success.
I will not fail. Pogs. I have lost all appetite to her, yet I loved her once. But since I've been in a great measure kept by her, the case is altered. What was my pleasure has become my duty, and I have as little stomach to her now as if I were her husband. Should she smoke my design upon Cynthia, I were in a fine pickle. She has a damn penetrating head, therefore I must dissemble ardor and ecstasy. That's resolved. Ah, yonder comes Mellifont. Let me think. Meet her at 8. By heaven, I have it. If I can speak to my lord before, I will deceive them all and yet secure myself. 'Twas a lucky thought. This double dealing is a jewel.
How now, Jack?
I'm glad you've come, for I could not contain myself any longer. Your aunt's just gone from hence.
And having trusted thee with the secrets of her soul, thou art villainously bent to discover them all to me, huh?
I don't know whether I can in honour discover them all.
All, man. What, you may in honour betray her as far as she betrays herself. No tragical design upon my person, I hope.
No, but it's a comical design upon mine.
What dost thou mean?
In short, the price of your banishment is to be paid with the person
of Cynthia and her fortune. Why, you forget you told me this before.
No, so far you are right. And I am, as an earnest of that bargain, to have full and free possession of the person of your aunt.
What? Foe, you trifle!
By this light, I'm serious, all raillery apart. I knew twould stun you. This evening at 8, she will receive me in her bedchamber.
Hell and the devil, is she abandoned of all grace? Why, the woman is possessed!
Will you go in my stead?
Into a hot furnace sooner?
No, you would not. It would not be so convenient as I can order matters.
What do you mean?
Mean? Not to disappoint the lady, I assure you. How gravely he looks. Come, I won't perplex you.
For heaven's sake, dear Maskwell!
I'll go according to appointment. You shall have notice at the critical moment to come and surprise your aunt and me together. Counterfeit a rage against me, and I'll make my escape through the private passage from her chamber, which I'll take care to leave open. This discovery will disarm her of all defense and leave her entirely at your mercy.
Let me adore thee, my better genius.
I'll meet you here within 7:45 and give you notice.
Good fortune ever go along with thee.
Mellifont, get out of the way. My lady Pliant's coming, and I shall never succeed in winning her over while thou art in sight. I made love a great while to no purpose.
Why, Careless, what's the matter?
Pox, I can't get an answer from her that does not begin with her honour or her virtue or some such cant. Mm. Then she has told me the whole history of Sir Paul's 9-year courtship.
Did she tell you at what a distance she keeps him? Huh? He has confessed to me that but at certain times, that is, I suppose when she apprehends being with child, he never has the privilege of using the familiarity of a husband with his wife. He was once given to scrambling with his hands and sprawling in his sleep, and ever since she has him swaddled up in blankets and his hands and feet swathed down and so put to bed, and there he lies with a great beard like a Russian bear upon a drift of snow.
What gives me most hope is her telling me of the many temptations she has resisted.
Then you have her. For a woman's bragging to a man that she has overcome temptations is an argument that they were weakly offered and a challenge to him to engage her more irresistibly. Mm-hmm. Ply her close. And by, clap a billet doux into her hand. For a woman never thinks a man truly in love with her till he has been fool enough to lose so much time as to write to her. Here's Sir Paul. I'll leave you.
Mr. Careless, you will be private.
You are always welcome to my privacy, Sir Paul.
Oh, sweet sir, you load your humble servants, both me and my wife, with continual favours.
Where is her ladyship?
Detained by a letter. She'll be along presently.
Oh, Sir Paul, you are the happiest man alive. Well, such a lady that is the envy of her own sex and the admiration of ours.
Aye, truly, Mr. Careless, my lady is a great blessing. And we are, I thank heaven, in a fine way of living, as I may say, peacefully and happily. Indeed, I should think myself the happiest man in the world if it were not for one thing that touches me near, very near.
What can that be, Sir Paul?
Why, I have, I thank heaven, a very plentiful fortune, a pretty tolerable personal estate. And it is a great grief to me, indeed it is, Mr. Careless, that I have not a son to inherit this. Oh. 'Tis true, I have a daughter, and a fine, dutiful child she is, though I say it, blessed be Providence. But if I had a son, that's my affliction, and my only affliction. Indeed, I cannot refrain tears when it comes to mine.
Well, methinks that might be easily remedied. My lady's a fine, likely woman.
Oh, a fine, likely woman, as you shall see in a summer's day.
And I should not have taken you to have been so old.
Oh, alas, that's not it, Mr. Careless. Oh, that's not it. No, you shoot wide of the mark of mine.
No, what can be the matter then?
You scarcely believe me when I shall tell you. My lady is so nice. It's very strange, but it's true. It's too true. She's so very nice that I don't believe she would touch a man for the world, at least not above once a year. Huh? I'm sure I have found it so. And alas, what's once a year to an old man who would do good in his generation? Oh. Indeed, it's true, Mr. Careless. It breaks my heart. Alas, a day I have no more familiarity with her person, as to that matter, than with my own mother.
Alas, a day, this is a lamentable story. My lady must be told, aunt. But she must, if faith, Sir Paul, 'tis an injury to the world.
Oh, would to heaven you would, Mr. Careless. You are mightily in her favour.
I warrant you, we must have a son, some way or other.
Indeed, I should be mightily bound to you if you could bring it about, Mr. Careless. She comes.
Yeah, Sir Paul. Take this letter from your steward. It's a return of £600. You may take 50 of it for your next half year.
Thank you, my dear.
Mr. Careless.
My Lady Pliant.
So fine a gentleman.
So charming.
You're so obliging, sir.
Your ladyship is abounding in all excellence.
So well bred.
Oh, I beseech you, madam.
So graceful, so fine shape, so fine limbs.
Heavens, madam.
And I doubt but you have a very good skin, sir.
Oh, I'm quite out of countenance.
Oh, my lady's quite out of breath.
If your ladyship please, we'll discourse in the next room.
Oh, I'm sure there's nothing in the world that I would rather.
Sir Paul, hearken. I'll reason the matter, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Madam!
Mr. Careless?
I wish you good success. Oh, I wish you good success.
Father?
My lamb!
I have a word.
And Lord Frost!
Sir Paul!
How does, my girl?
Father!
Thou art melancholy.
Heaven, you amaze me. Of all things in the world, you are never pleased, but when we are all upon the broad grin. All laugh and no company. Well, it is such a sight to see some teeth. Sure, you're a great admirer of my Lady Whiffler and Mr. Sneer and that gang.
I vow and swear my Lady Whiffler's a very merry woman, but I think she laughs a little too much.
Merry? Oh, Lord, what a character that is of a woman of quality.
Indeed, my Lord, indeed. But I would speak with my Lady Wife when she has done. So then, the servant, my Lord.
Sir Paul.
Father.
Madam, you have been at my Lady Whiffler's upon her day.
Yes, my Lord.
And what is your sense of the conversation?
Most ridiculous, my Lord. A perpetual consort of laughing without any harmony. And to laugh out of time is as disagreeable as to sing out of tune.
Right. And then my Lady Whiffler is so ready. She always comes in three bars too soon. And then what do they laugh at? For you know laughing without a jest is as impertinent
As dancing without a fiddle?
Jest, in faith, that was at my tongue's end.
The episode between Susan, the dairymaid, and our coachman is not a miss.
Incomparable, let me perish. But then, being an heroic poet, had you not better call him a charioteer?
Oh.
Charioteer sounds great. Besides, your ladyship's coachman has a red face, and you compare him to the sun. And you know the sun is called Heaven's Charioteer.
Oh, infinitely better. I'm extremely beholden to you for the hint. We'll read over those half a score lines again. For as the sun shines every day, so of our coachman I may say...
I'm afraid that simile won't do in wet weather, because you say the sun shines every day.
No, for the sun it won't, but it will do for the coachman. For you know there's most occasion for a coach in wet weather.
Right. That saves all.
Then I don't say the sun shines all the day, but that he peeps now and then. Yet... he does shine all the day, too, you know, though we don't see him.
Oh, the vulgar will never comprehend that.
Well, you shall hear. Let me see. For as the sun shines every day, so of our coachman, I may say, he shows his drunken, fiery face just as the sun does, more or less.
That's right. All's well, more or less.
And when at night his labour's done, then too, like heaven's charioteer, the sun, my charioteer does better, into the dairy he descends, and there his whipping and his driving ends. There he's secure from danger of a bilk. His fare is paid him, and he sets in milk.
Oh. Incomparable, well and proper again.
Oh!
My dear, have you done?
Aye, my dear.
Won't you join with us? We were laughing at my Lady Whiffler and Mr. Sneer.
Where are you? Filthy Mr. Sneer. He's a nauseous figure, a most balsamic fop.
He spent 2 days together in going about Covent Garden to suit the lining of his coach with his complexion.
Oh, silly. Yet his aunt is as fond of him as if she had brought the ape into the world herself.
Who? My Lady Toothless? Oh, she's a mortifying spectacle. She's always chewing the cud like an old ewe.
Fie, Mr. Brisk. 'Tis a Ringo's for her cough.
I have seen her take them half-chewed out of her mouth to laugh and then put them back in again. Then she's always ready to laugh when Sneer offers to speak and sits in expectation of his no jest with her gums bare and her mouth open.
Like an oyster at low ebb again.
Then that other great strapping lady, I can't hit of her name, the old fat fool that paints so exorbitantly.
Paints, do you say? Why, she lays it on with a trowel. Then she has a great beard that bristles through it and makes her look as if she were plastered with lime and hair, let me perish. But, deuce take me, I can't hit of her name neither.
Oh, you made a song upon her, Mr. Brisk.
Gad, so I did. My lord can sing it.
Oh, good, my lord, let's hear it.
It is not a song neither. It's a sort of epigram, or rather, an epigrammatic sonnet. I don't know what to call it, but it's satire. Sing it, my lord.
No, but Mr. Brisk.
Do!
Oh, well. Ancient Phyllis has young graces, young graces. 'Tis a strange thing, a strange I tell you, tell you, tell you, shall I tell you how she herself shall make her own faces, and each morning, 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 still wears a new one. Where's the wonder now, 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 now? Where's the wonder now, 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 now? The wonder now, 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 now.
'Tis done.
Oh.
Short, but there's salt in it. My way of writing again.
Heavens! What is it?
Oh, my lord, my lord! My chair has come.
Yes, my dear.
With the nurse and the child in it. Oh, woo! Oh, the precious creature. Let's go see it.
I swear, my dear, you'll spoil that child with sending it to and again so often. This is the seventh time the chair has gone for her today.
Oh, Lord, I swear it is but the sixth. And I haven't seen her for these 2 hours. The poor dear creature. I swear, my lord, you don't love poor little Sappho. Come, my dear Cynthia. Mr. Brisk, we'll go see Sappho, though my lord won't.
I'll come presently, your ladyship.
Pray, madam, how old is Lady Sappho?
3 quarters. Oh. But I swear she has the world of wit and can sing a tune already. My lord, won't you go? Won't you? What, not to see Seth? Pray, my lord, come see little Seth.
Oh, very well, my dear.
I knew you could not stay.
'Tis not so hard to counterfeit joy in the depth of affliction as to dissemble mirth in the company of fools.
My darling.
Mellifont. I lay my life it will never be a match between you and me.
What? Why so?
My mind gives me it won't because we are both willing. I swear it never does well when the parties are so agreed.
Oh, my sweet, I don't know why we should not steal out of the house this very moment and marry one another. Pox of fortune, portion, settlements and jointures.
Aye, what have we to do with them? You know, we marry for love.
Love? Love, downright very villainous love.
And he that can't live upon love deserves to die in a ditch. Here then I give you my promise. In spite of duty, any temptation of wealth, your inconstancy or my own inclination to change...
To run most willfully and unreasonably away with me this moment and be married...
Hold. Never to marry anybody else.
That's but a kind of negative consent. Why, you won't balk the frolic?
'Tis reasonable that since I consent to like a man without the vile consideration of money, he should give me a very evident demonstration of his wit. Therefore, let me see you undermine my Lady Touchwood as you boasted and force her to give her consent, and then...
I'll do it.
And I'll do it.
Very next ensuing hour of 8 o'clock is the last minute of her reign, unless the devil assist her himself.
Well, if the devil should assist her and your plot miscarry...
Aye, what am I to trust to then?
Why, if you give me very clear demonstration that it was the devil, I'll allow it. But if I find it to be only chance or destiny or unlucky stars or anything but the very devil, I'm inexorable. Only still I'll keep my word and live a maid for your sake.
But you won't die one for your own. So there's still hope.
I swear, Mr. Careless, you are very alluring, and say so many fine things, and nothing is so moving to me as a fine thing. Well, I must do you this justice, and declare in the face of the world, never anybody gained so far upon me as yourself. With blushes, I must own it. You have shaken, as I may say, the very foundation of my honour. Well, sure, if I escape your importunities, I shall value myself as long as I live. I swear...
And despise me.
The last of any man in the world by my purity. Oh,
Now you make me swear. Oh, gratitude forbid that I should ever be wanting in a respectful acknowledgement of an entire resignation of all my best wishes for the person and parts of so accomplished a person, whose merit challenges much more, I'm sure, than my illiterate praises can describe.
Ah, heavens, madam, you ruin me with kindness. At your feet, your poor adorer dies.
Oh, very fine.
Oh, why are you so fair, so bewitching fair? Oh, let me grow to the ground here and feast upon that hand.
Oh,
let me press it to my heart, my trembling heart. The nimble movement shall instruct your pulse and teach it to alarm desire. I'm almost at the end of my cant if she does not yield quickly.
Oh, that's so passionate and fine. I cannot hear it. I'm not safe to stay. And I must leave you.
And must you leave me? Rather, let me languish out a wretched life and breathe my soul beneath your feet. I must say the same thing over again.
Oh, my honour. I protest you have given me a palpitation. Rise, I beseech you.
Can you be so cruel?
Say no more till you rise. Well, to show you how far you have gained upon me, I assure you, if Sir Paul should die, of all mankind, there's none I'd sooner make my second choice.
Oh, heaven, I can't outlive this night without your favour. I feel my spirits faint. A general dampness overspreads my face. A cold, deadly dew already vents through all my pores and will tomorrow wash me forever from your sight and drown me in my tomb.
Oh, you have conquered, sweet melting, moving sir, you have conquered. What heart of marble can refrain to weep and yield to such sad sayings?
I thank heaven they are the saddest that I ever said.
Oh, I yield myself up to your uncontrollable embraces. Say thou, dear, dying man, when, where, and how? Oh, there's my husband.
Slife, Sir Paul. I must be gone. I'm so transported I cannot speak. This note will inform you.
My tender lambkin, you must endeavour to forget Miss Mellifont.
I could obey you to my power, sir, but if I have not him, I have sworn never to marry.
Never to marry? Heaven forbid. Must I neither have sons nor grandsons? Must the family of the Pliants be utterly extinct for want of issue male? Oh, impiety! How durst you swear without my consent?
When I swore, I had your consent.
Then I revoke my consent so you may unswear. The law will allow it.
But my conscience never will.
Gads, but no matter for that. Conscience and law never go together.
'Tis true, Sir Paul.
Oh, my lady.
But I conceive, if she has swore, it is most unchristian and obscene that she should break it.
Does your ladyship conceive so? Why, I was of that opinion once, too. Nay, if your ladyship conceives so, I'm of that opinion again. But I can neither find my lord nor my sister Touchwood to know what they intend.
I'm satisfied that my cousin Mellifont has been much wronged.
I'm amazed to find her of our side, for I'm sure she loved him.
I know my Lady Touchwood has no kindness for him. And besides, I've been informed by Mr. Careless that Mellifont had never anything more than a profound respect. That he has owned himself to be my admirer, 'tis true, but he was never so presumptuous to entertain any dishonourable notions of things. So that, if this be made plain, I don't see how my daughter can in conscience, or honour, or anything in the world...
Indeed, if this be made plain, as my lady, your mother, says, child...
Plain? I was informed of it by Mr. Careless. And I assure you, Mr. Careless is a person that has the most extraordinary respect and honour for you, Sir Paul.
And for your ladyship, too, I believe, or else you had not changed sides so soon. Now I begin to find it.
I am much obliged to Mr. Careless, really. He is a person that I have a great value for, not only for that, but because he has a great veneration for your ladyship.
Oh, that's no indeed, Sir Paul. It is upon your account.
No, I protest and vow I have no title to his esteem, but in having the honour to appertain in some measure to your ladyship. That's all.
Oh, Lord, now I swear and declare you're too modest, Sir Paul.
It becomes me when there is any comparison made between...
Oh, fie, fie, Sir Paul. You put me out of countenance. You're very obedient and affectionate wife. That's all. And highly honoured in that title.
Gads, but I am transported. Give me leave to kiss your ladyship's hand.
My lip, indeed, Sir Paul. I swear you shall.
Oh,
that my... Poor father should be so very silly.
I humbly thank
Your ladyship.
I don't know whether I fly on ground or walk in air. Gadsbud, she was never thus before. Well, I must own myself the most beholden to Mr. Careless. As sure as can be, this is all his doing. Well, your ladyship is of opinion that the match may go forward.
By all means. Mr. Careless has satisfied me of the matter.
Why then, Cynthia, my lad, you may keep your oath, but have a care of making rash vows. Come and kiss Papa.
I swear and declare, I'm in such a twitter to read Mr. Careless's note that I can't forbear any longer. Sir Paul?
Did your ladyship call?
Nay, not to interrupt you, my dear. Only lend me the letter from the steward I gave you. I would look upon the account again and maybe increase your allowance.
There it is, madam.
Thank you, Sir Paul. So, now I can read Careless's note under the cover of this.
And wilt thou bring a grandson at 9 months' end, eh? A brave, chopping boy. I'm overjoyed to think I have any of my family that will bring children into the world, for I would fain have some resemblance of myself in my posterity. Can't you contrive that affair, girl? Make the young rogue as like as you can.
I'm glad to see you so merry, sir.
Merry, Cats, but I'm serious. Oh, my dear, don't learn after your stepmother, my lady here. Marry, heaven forbid that you should follow her example. That would spoil all indeed. Bless us, if you should take a vagary and make a rash resolution on your wedding night to die a maid, as she did, all were ruined, all my hopes lost. My heart would break, and my estate left to the wide world. I hope you're a better Christian than to think of living a nun, eh? Answer me.
I'm all obedience, sir, to your commands.
Oh, dear Mr. Careless. I swear he writes charmingly and he looks charmingly. And he has charmed me as much as I've charmed him. And so I'll tell him in the wardrobe when 'tis dark. Oh, criminy. I hope Sir Paul has not seen me with both letters. Sir Paul, here's your letter. Tomorrow morning I'll settle accounts to your advantage.
Sir Paul! But you're an uncivil person, let me tell you, and all that.
Oh, Lord, I hope you're not angry, Mr. Brisk.
Do take me. I believe you intend to marry your daughter yourself. You're always brooding over her like an old hen, as if she were not well hatched again, eh?
Strange, Mr. Brisk is such a merry, facetious person. No, no, I've done with her now.
The fiddles are in the hall, and my Lord Frothman's apartment.
Go, child, get you gone and dance and be merry. I'll come and look at you by and by. Where's Mellifont?
I'll send him to them. I know where he is.
Sir Paul, will you send Careless into the hall if you meet him?
I will. I'll go and look for him on purpose.
So, now they are all gone. Oh, my dear Lady Froth. She's a most engaging creature, if she were not so fond of that damned coxcombly lord of hers. And yet, I am forced to allow him wit too to keep in with him. No matter. She's a woman of parts, and egad, parts will carry her. Here she comes. I'll seem not to see her and try to win her with a new, airy invention of my own. I'm sick with love, sick with love. Pray thee come, cure me. Oh, ye powers. My Lady Froth. Hey-ho, break up. Gods, I thank you.
Oh, heavens, Mr. Brisk. What's the matter?
My Lady Froth, your ladyship's most humble servant. The matter, madam, nothing at all again.
Bless me, why did you call out upon me so loud?
Oh, Lord, I, madam? I beseech your ladyship when?
Just now, as I came in. Bless me, why don't you know it?
Not I let me perish, but did I? Strange. To see how love and murder were lied. But did I really name my Lady Froth?
3 times aloud as I love letters. But did you talk of love? Oh, Parnassus. Who would have thought Mr. Brisk could be in love?
Would you take me if I can tell whether I am glad or sorry that your ladyship has made the discovery?
Oh, be merry by all means.
Would you take me? I can't help laughing myself. Yet by heavens, I have a violent passion for your ladyship. Seriously.
Seriously?
Seriously. Can I have for all I love?
What do you think I laugh at?
Me again?
No, the deuce take me if I don't laugh at myself. For hang me if I have not a violent passion for Mr. Brisk.
Stuart.
Seriously?
What a happy discovery. Oh. My dear, charming Lady Frost.
Oh, my lord, Mr. Brisk.
The company are gathering.
Zins, madam, here's my lord.
Take no notice, but observe me. Now, cast off and meet me at the lower end of the room and join hands again. I could teach my lord this dance purely, but I know, Mr. Brisk, I can't tell how to come so near any other man. Oh, here's my lord. Now you shall see me do it with him. Shall you and I do our close dance to show Mr. Brisk?
No, my dear, do it with him.
I'll do it with him, my lord, when you are out of the way.
That's good again. Do you take me? I can hardly hold laughing in his face.
Any other time, my dear, or we'll dance it below.
With all my heart.
Come, my lord, I'll wait on you. My charming, witty angel.
Mr. Careless, I'm ruined. I'm done.
What's the matter, madam?
Oh, the unluckiest accident. I'm afraid I shan't live to tell it you.
Heaven forbid, what is it?
I'm in such a fright. I'm all over in a universal agitation. I dare swear every circumstance of me trembles. Oh, your letter. Your letter. By an unfortunate mistake, I've given Sir Paul your letter.
That was unlucky.
Yonder he comes, reading it. Step in here and advise me quickly before he sees.
Providence, what a conspiracy I have discovered. After supper in the wardrobe by the gallery, if Sir Paul should surprise us, I have a commission from him to treat with you about the very matter of fact. Matter of fact, very pretty. It seems then I am conducing to my own cuckoldom. Till then, I languish in expectation of my adored charmer, dying Ned Careless. Gad's bud, would that were matter of fact too, die and be damned for a Judas. Oh, friendship, what art thou but a name? Have I been pinioned night after night for 3 years past? Have I been swathed in blankets till I have been even deprived of motion and rendered incapable of using the common benefits of nature? Have I approached the marriage bed with reverence as to a sacred shrine and denied myself the enjoyment of lawful domestic pleasures to preserve its purity, and now must I find it polluted by foreign iniquity? Oh, my Lady Pliant, you were chaste as ice, but you are melted now and false as water.
So, sir, I see you have read the letter. Well now, Sir Paul, what do you think of your friend Careless? Has he been treacherous? Or did you give his insolence a license to make trial of your wife's suspected virtue? You see here? Look. Read it. If so, a plot upon my honor. Your guilty cheeks confess it. I'll be divorced this instant.
This is the strangest surprise. Why, I don't know anything at all.
I thought I should try you, false man. I that never dissembled in my life. Yet to make trial of you, pretended to like that monster of iniquity Careless, and found out that contrivance to let you see this letter, which now I find was of your own indicting.
No.
See my face no more. There has hardly been consummation between us, and I'll be divorced presently.
I'm so amazed, and so overjoyed, so afraid, and so sorry. But did you give me this letter on purpose, eh? Did you?
Did I? Do you doubt me, Turk?
Well, I beseech your ladyship, I'm so overjoyed, I'll confess all.
What will you confess, Jew?
Why, now, as I hope to be saved, I had no hand in this letter. The devil take me now if he did not go beyond my commission. If I desired him to do any more than speak a good word for me, only for poor Sir Paul, I'm a Turk, a Jew, or what you please to call me.
Why is not here a matter of fact?
Aye, but by your own virtue and continency, that matter of fact is all his own doing. I confess I had a great desire to have some honours conferred upon me which lie all in your ladyship's breast. And I desired him to intercede for me.
Did you so? Presumption. Well, for this, your right hand shall be swathed down again tonight.
Nay, but madam, I shall offend again if you don't allow me that to reach.
Drink the less you sought and do it before you come to bed.
Look. Oh.
Sir Paul, I'm glad I've met with you.
Mr. Careless!
Gad, I have said all I could but can't prevail. Then my friendship to you has carried me a little farther in this matter.
Indeed. Well, sir.
Why, Faith, I have in my time known honest gentlemen abused by a pretended coyness in their wives, and I had a mind to try my lady's virtue. And when I could not prevail for you, Gad, I pretended to be in love myself. But all in vain. She would not hear a word upon that subject. Then I writ a letter to her. I don't know what effects that will have, but I'll be sure to tell you when I do. Though by this light, I believe her virtue impregnable.
Oh, Providence, Providence, what discoveries are here made? Why, this is better and more miraculous than the rest.
What do you mean?
I can't tell you. I'm so overjoyed. Come along with me to my lady. I can't contain myself. Come, my dear friend.
So, this difficulty is over.
Maskwell, I've been looking for you. It is within a quarter of eight.
My lady has just gone down from my lord's closet. You would best steal into her chamber before she comes, and make haste. For after she has made some apology to the company for her and my lord's absence all this while, she'll retire instantly.
I go this moment. Now, fortune, I defy thee.
I confess you may be allowed to be secure in your own opinion. But I have an after game to play that shall turn the tables. And here comes the man that I must manage.
Pasquale, you are the man I wish to meet.
I am happy to be in the way of your lordship's commands.
I've always found you prudent and careful in anything that has concerned me or my family.
I were a villain else. I am bound by duty and gratitude and my own inclination to be ever your lordship's servant.
Enough. You are my friend. I know it. Yet, there has been a thing in your knowledge which has concerned me nearly, that you have concealed from me.
My lord.
Now, I excuse your friendship to my unnatural nephew thus far, but I know you have been privy to his impious designs upon my wife.
Ah.
This evening she has told me all. Her good nature concealed it as long as was possible, but he preserves so in villainy that she's told me even you are weary of dissuading him, though you have once actually hindered him from forcing her.
I am sorry, my lord. I can make you no answer. This is an occasion in which I would not willingly be so silent.
I know you would excuse him, and I know as well that you can't.
Indeed, I was in hopes to have been a youthful heat that might have soon boiled over, but...
Say on.
I have nothing more to say, my lord, but to express my concern. For I think his frenzy increases daily.
How? Give me proof of it. Ocular proof that I may justify my dealing with him to the world and share my fortune.
Oh, my lord, consider that is hard. I have professed an everlasting friendship to him.
He is your friend. And what am I?
I am answered.
Fear not his displeasure. I will put you out of his and fortune's power. And for that thou art scrupulously honest, I will secure thy fidelity to him, and give my honour never to own any discovery that you shall make me. Can you give me a demonstrative proof? Speak.
I wish I could not. To be plain, my lord, I intended this evening to have tried all arguments to dissuade him from a design which I suspect.
Yeah?
And if I had not succeeded, to have informed your lordship of what I knew.
I thank you. What is the villain's purpose?
He has owned nothing to me of late, and what I mean now is only a bare suspicion of my own. If your lordship will meet me a quarter of an hour hence there, in that lobby by my lady's bedchamber, I shall be able to tell you more.
I will.
My duty to your lordship makes me do a severe piece of justice.
I will be secret, and reward your honesty beyond your hopes.
Keep touch with her assignation. Oh, that her lord were but sweating behind this hanging with the expectation of what I shall see. Hist, she comes. Little does she think what a mine is just ready to spring under her feet.
It is 8 o'clock. Methinks I should have found him here. Who does not anticipate the hour of love? I've stays the time, for even to be dully punctual is too slow.
I was accusing you of neglect.
I confess you do reproach me when I see you here before me. But 'tis fit I should be still behindhand, still to be more and more indebted to your goodness.
You can excuse a fault too well not to have been to blame. A ready answer shows you were prepared.
Guilt is ever at a loss, and confusion waits upon it, when innocence and bold truth are always ready for expression.
Not in love. Words are the weak support of cold indifference. Love has no language to be heard.
Excess of joy had made me stupid. Thus may my lips be ever closed. And thus, oh, who would not lose his speech upon condition to have joys above?
Hold! Let me lock the door first.
'Twas well I left the private passage open.
So, that's safe.
And so, may all your pleasures be as secret as this kiss. Oh.
And may all treachery be thus discovered. Villain!
Nathan, there's but one way.
I'll say you, sir. Were you provided for an escape? Hold, madam, you have no more holes to your burrow. I'll stand between you and this sallyport.
Thunder strike me dead for this deceit. Ooh, I could play the vulture to my own heart for not boding to me this misfortune.
I have you on the hook.
I'll hold my breath and die, but I'll be free.
Oh, madam, have a care of dying unprepared.
What shall I do? Stay! Whither shall I turn? Hath hell no remedy?
Hell has served you even as heaven has done, left you to yourself. Yet with a little penance and my absolution, all this may turn to good account.
Hold in my passion and fall thy swelling heart. Let me have 1 minute's coolness to dissemble.
I like those tears. I hope they are of the purest kind.
Can you have mercy to forgive the faults I have imagined, but never put into practice? Oh, consider how fatal you have been to me. You have already killed the quiet of this life. The love of you was the first wandering fire that ever misled my steps. And while I had only that in view, I was betrayed into unthought-of ways of ruin.
May I believe this true?
Oh, how can you doubt these streaming eyes? Keep the severest eye on all my future conduct. And if I once relapse, let me not hope forgiveness. It will ever be in your power to ruin me. My lord shall sign to your desires. I will myself create your happiness, and Cynthia shall be this night your bride. Oh, do but conceal my failing and forgive.
Upon such terms, I will be ever yours in every honest way.
I have kept my word, my lord. He's here. Hell and abasement, and I must not be seen. I'll leave you.
On my knees, I thank you. Eternal blessings, thank you.
She's in tears. My lord, listening. Fortune has o'erpaid me. All's my own.
Nay, I beseech you, rise.
Never, never. I'll grow to the ground ere I be consenting to so damned a sin as incest.
Huh?
Oh, cruel man, will you not let me go? I'll forgive all that is past. Oh, heavens, you will not ravish me.
Damnation!
Gog, your life shall answer this.
Oh, heavens, my lord, hold them safe.
My uncle, oh, the damned sorceress.
Moderate your rage, good my lord. He's mad. Unless he's mad and knows not what he does. See how wild he looks.
By heavens, so senseless not to be mad and see such witchcraft.
My lord, you hear him. He talks idly.
Hence from my sight, thou living infamy to my name. When next I see that face, I'll write villain in't with my sword's point.
Now, by my soul, I will not go till I have made known my wrongs. Nay, till I have made known yours, which, if possible, are greater. Though she has all the host of hell her servants, though she can wear more shapes in shining day than fear shows cowards in the dark.
Alas, he raves, talks very poetry. For heaven's sake, away, my lord. He'll either tempt you to extravagance or commit some himself.
Death and furies, will you not hear me?
Why, by heaven, she laughs, grins, points to your back. She forks out cuckoldom with her fingers, and you're running horn mad after your fortune.
I fear he's mad indeed. Let's send Maskwell to him.
Send him to her.
Come, come, my lord. My heart aches so, I shall faint if I stay.
Oh, I could curse my stars. For a man to have the fruit of all his industry grow full and ripe, and just when he holds out his hand to gather it, to have a sudden whirlwind tear up tree and all, what temper can contain? They talk of sending Maskwell to me. I never had more need of him. But what can he do? Imagination cannot form a fairer and more plausible design than this of his which has miscarried. Oh, my precious aunt! I shall never thrive without I deal with the devil or another woman. Women, like flames, have a destroying power, ne'er to be quenched till they themselves devour.
Maskwell,
my lady.
Was not lucky?
Lucky? Fortune is your own, and 'tis her interest so to be. By heaven, I believe you can control her power, and she fears it.
Ah.
Though chance brought my lord, 'twas your own art that turned it to advantage.
It is true, it might have been my ruin. But yonder's my lord. I believe he's coming to find you. I'll not be seen.
My lord is thoughtful. I'll be so too.
What have I done?
Talking to himself.
'Twas honest, and shall I be rewarded for it? No. 'Twas honest, therefore I shan't. Nay, rather, therefore, I ought not, for it rewards itself.
Unequalled virtue.
But should it be known, then I have lost a friend. But he was an ill man, so I have gained. I have served myself, and what's better, served a worthy lord to whom I owe myself.
Excellent man.
Yet I am wretched. Oh, there is a secret burns within this breast, which, should it once blaze forth, would ruin all, and brand me with the name of villain. Oh, should it once be known I love fair Cynthia, all this that I have done would look like rival's malice, false friendship to my lord, and base self-interest. Let me perish first, and from this hour avoid all sight and speech, and, if I can, all thought of that pernicious beauty. But I am wildly talking to myself, and some ill chance might have directed malicious ears this way. My lord!
Start not. Let guilty and dishonest souls start at the revelation of their thoughts, but be thou fixed, as is thy virtue.
I beg your lordship's pardon.
Come, I beg your pardon that I overheard, and yet it shall not need. Honest Maskwell, thy and my good genius led me hither. Mine, in that I have discovered so much manly virtue. Thine, in that thou shalt have due reward of all thy worth. Give me thy hand. My nephew is the alone remaining branch of all our ancient family. Him I thus blow away and constitute thee in his room to be my heir.
Now, heaven forbid.
No more, I have resolved. The writings are ready drawn and wanted nothing but to be signed and have his name inserted. Yours will fill the blank as well.
But my
I will
lord.
Have no reply. Let me command this time, for 'tis the last in which I will assume authority. Hereafter, you shall rule where I have power.
I humbly would petition.
For yourself? I'll hear of naught for anybody else.
Then witness heaven for me. This wealth and honor was not of my seeking, nor would I build my fortune on another's ruin. I had but one desire.
Thou shalt enjoy it. If all I'm worth in wealth or interest can purchase Cynthia, she is thine. I'm sure Sir Paul's consent will follow fortune. Now, I'll quickly show him which way that is going.
You oppress me with bounty. What enjoy, my love? Oh, forgive the transports of a blessing so unthought of.
I will confirm it and rejoice with thee. Adieu.
This is prosperous indeed. But should he find me out? 'Tis dangerous to delay. Let me think. Should my lord proceed to treat openly of my marriage with Cynthia, all will be discovered, and Mellifont can be no longer blinded. And should my lady know it, then were fine work indeed. Her fury would spare nothing, though she involved herself in ruin. No, it must be by stratagem. I must deceive Mellifont once more and get my lord to consent to my private management. He comes opportunely. Now will I, in my old way, discover the whole and real truth of the matter to him, that he may not suspect one word on't.
Oh, Maskwell, what hopes? I am confounded in perplexity. My uncle will not see nor hear me.
No matter, sir, don't trouble your head. All is in my power.
How, for heaven's sake?
Little do you think that your aunt has kept her word. How the devil she wrought my lord into this dotage, I know not. But he's gone to Sir Paul about my marriage with Cynthia and has appointed me his heir.
The devil he has! What's to be done?
I have it. It must be by stratagem, for it's in vain to make application to him. I think I have that in my head that cannot fail. Where's Cynthia?
In the garden.
Let us go and consult her. My life for yours, I cheat my lord.
Maskwell, your heir, and marry Cynthia?
I cannot do too much for so much merit.
But this is a thing of too great moment to be so suddenly resolved. Why must he be married? And why Cynthia? He himself may have affections elsewhere.
I am convinced he loves her.
Impossible.
He confessed it to me.
How's this?
His love of Mellifont would have made him still conceal it. But by encouragement I wrung the secret from him, and know he's no way to be rewarded but in her. I'll defer my farther proceedings in it till you have considered it. But remember how we are both indebted to him.
Hell and fire, it cannot be. Maskwell loves Cynthia. What have I been bored to his designs? His property only? A baiting place to stay his stomach in the road to her? Now I see what made him false to Mellifont. Shame and distraction, I cannot bear it. What shall I do? I cannot think. All my designs are lost. My love unsated, my revenge unfinished.
My lady sister, did you see my lady, my wife?
Oh, torture.
Yes, well, I can't find a high nor low. Where can she be, thank you?
Don't you know that you're a fool, brother?
A fool? Oh, you're merry. Oh. But harkee, your husband told me something of a revolution of things. I don't know what to make on Gadsbutt. I must consult my wife. He talks of disinheriting his nephew, and I don't know what. I must know what my Cynthia has to trust to, or not a syllable of a wedding, Gadsbutt, to show you that I'm not a fool.
Hear me. Consent to the breaking off this marriage and the promoting any other without consulting me, and I'll renounce all blood, all relation and concern with you forever. Nay, I'll be your enemy and pursue you to destruction. I'll tear your eyes out and tread you under my feet.
Why, what's the matter now? Good Lord, what's all this for? Where's my wife?
With Careless in the close arbor. He may want you by this time as much as you want her.
Oh, if she be with Careless, 'tis well enough.
Fool! Stop! It's sensible! Off! Remember what I said! Or you better eat your own horns and pimp for your living!
She's a passionate woman, Gadsbutt. But to say truth, all our family are choleric. I'm the only peaceable person amongst them.
I know no other way but this Maskwell has proposed. If you have love enough to run the venture...
I don't know whether I have love enough, but I find I have courage enough to oppose anything that resists my will, though to a reason itself.
Well, I'll secure the writings and run the hazard along with you.
But how can the coach and 6 horses be got ready without suspicion?
It shall be got ready by my lord's own order.
How?
I intend to tell my lord the whole matter of our contrivance. That's my way.
I don't understand you.
Why? I'll tell my lord I laid this plot with you on purpose to betray you, because it was impossible to gain the lady any other way but in the hopes of her marrying you.
So,
while you're busied in making yourself ready, I'll wheedle her into the coach and instead of you, borrow my lord's chaplain and so run away with her myself.
This you'll tell him so?
You don't think I mean to do so?
No. I dare swear thou wilt not.
Therefore, for our further security, I would have you disguised like a parson, that if my lord should have curiosity to peep, he may not discover you in the coach, but think the cheat is carried on as he would have it.
Excellent, Maskwell.
Now get yourselves ready, and meet me in half an hour in my lady's dressing room. Go by the back stairs, so we may slip down without being observed. I'll send the chaplain to you with his robes.
I have made him my own, and ordered him to meet us tomorrow morning at St. Albans. There we will sum up this account to all our satisfaction.
Should I begin to thank thee, I should waste the little time we have.
I will be punctual to the minute.
Stay, madam. I have a doubt. On second thoughts, we had better meet in the chaplain's chamber. There's a back way to it, so you need not come through the door, and a pair of private stairs leading down to the stables. It will be more convenient.
But Malefon will mistake.
No, no, I'll after him immediately and tell him.
I will not fail.
Why, it is no fault of mine. I have told him in plain terms. I'll ensure there's no light in the chaplain's chamber and instruct my little priests not to speak, that Cynthia may not distinguish him from Malefant. How easy it is for me to cheat him. But here's my lord. Now to prepare him to consent to this.
Ah, Maskwell, have you seen my wife lately?
No, my lord.
Or disobliged her?
Disobliged her, my lord?
No. Then Malefant has urged somebody to incense her. Something she has heard of you, which carries her beyond the bounds of patience.
This I feared. Did not your lordship tell her of the honors you design me?
Yes.
Tis that. She thinks I am unworthy.
Unworthy? Tis an ignorant pride in her to think so. By heaven, I'll not be wife-riddled. Were it possible it should be done this night?
A few things are impossible to willing minds.
Instruct me how this may be done.
I had laid a small design for tomorrow, which I thought to communicate to your lordship, but it may as well be done tonight.
Well, here's company. Come this way and tell me.
There's Maskwell walking with my lord.
Yes.
By heaven, there's treachery. The confusion that I saw your father in, my Lady Touchwood's passion, with what imperfectly I overheard between my lord and her, confirmed me in my fears.
Thank heaven you intercepted me, else it would have been too late.
There's Malefant on the terrace.
Quick!
Malefant! Careless!
Oh, my darling!
But you must get ready, my dear. The things are all in my chamber. I want nothing but the chaplain's habit.
You are betrayed.
How?
Has Maskwell told you anything of the chaplain's chamber?
Why, no.
When you were gone, he said his mind was changed and bid us all meet him in the chaplain's chamber, pretending immediately to follow you and give you notice of it.
He's the villain I always thought him.
No.
Malefant, let us find the chaplain and see if he be ignorant that Maskwell means to use his chamber.
I cannot think him false.
Cynthia.
My lord.
Alone, fair cousin, and melancholy?
My thoughts were on serious business.
Serious business?
Yes, my lord. On treachery concerning you.
How's this? Pray, be plain.
Will you not hear me?
What noise?
No! Monster!
Tis Maskwell!
My lady with a dagger! This may be lucky. My lord, let me entreat you to stand aside and listen. You may get proof of what you ne'er could have believed from my suspicions.
You want but leisure to invent fresh falsehood and soothe me to a fond belief of all your fictions. But I will stab the lion, save a sin, in pity to your soul.
Right then, since you will have it so.
Oh, a steady villain to the last. Oh, do you mock my rage? Then this shall punish your fond rash contempt. Oh, again, smile. And such a smile as speaks in ambiguity. 10,000 meanings lurk in each corner of that various face. Oh, that they were written in my heart. I, with this, might lay thee open to my sight. But then, it will be too late to know. Oh, I am bewildered by passion. But thus my anger melts. Here, take the dagger, for my very spirits faint, and I want strength to hold it. Thou hast disarmed my soul.
Amazement shakes me.
So, 'tis well. When you have temper, tell me. Now I am calm and can hear you. First, tell me what urged you to this violence. My lord himself surprised me with the news that you were to marry Cynthia, that you had owned your love to him, and his indulgence would assist you to attain your ends.
How, my lord?
Pray forbear all resentments for a while, and let us hear the rest.
I grant you, in appearance, all is true.
I seemed consenting to my lord, nay, transported with a blessing. But could you think that I, who had been happy in your loved embraces, could e'er be fond of an inferior slave?
Poison to my ears.
Nay, good my lord, forbear resentment. Let us hear it out.
I, that had wantoned in the wide circle of your world of love, could be confined within the puny province of a girl? No. I would give a limb for every look you cheaply throw away on any other object of your love. I prize your pleasures o'er my own. This plot I have laid has been to gratify your taste and cheat the world, to prove a faithful rogue to you.
If this were true...
I have contrived that Mellifont will presently, in the chaplain's habit, wait for Cynthia in your dressing room. But I have put the change upon her that she may be otherwhere employed. Procure her cloak, and with your hood tied over your face, meet Mellifont in her stead. You may go privately by the back stairs and propose to reinstate him in his uncle's favor, if he'll comply with your desires. His case is desperate, and I believe he'll yield to any conditions. If not, take this dagger. You may employ it better than in the heart of one who is nothing when not yours.
Thou canst deceive everybody. Nay, thou hast deceived me, but 'tis as I would wish. Trusted villain, I could worship thee.
No more. It wants but a few minutes of the time, and Mellifont's love will carry him there before this hour.
I go. I fly. Incomparable Maskwell.
So this was a pinch indeed. My invention was upon the rack and made discovery of her last plot. I hope Cynthia and the chaplain will be ready. I'll prepare for the expedition.
Now, my lord.
Villainy upon villainy. Heavens, what a long track of dark deceit has this discovered. My wife, damnation.
My lord, be happy that this discovery was not made too late.
It may be still if we don't presently prevent the execution of their plots. I'll do it. Where's Mellifont, my poor injured nephew? Now, how shall I make him ample satisfaction?
I dare answer for him.
Oh, I do him fresh wrong to question his forgiveness, for I know him to be all goodness. Yet my wife, damn her! She'll think to meet him in that dressing room, was not so? And Maskwell will expect you in the chaplain's chamber. For once, I'll add my plot, too. Let us haste to find out and inform my nephew, and do you, quickly as you can, bring all the company into the gallery. I'll expose the strumpet and the villain. By heavens, I've slept an age. What o'clock is? Past eight, on my conscience. Ah, Sir Paul. But where's all the company?
I don't know, my lord, but here's the strangest revolution. All turned topsy-turvy, as I hope for Providence.
Oh, heavens, what's the matter? Where's my wife?
All turned topsy-turvy, as sure as a gun.
How do you mean? My wife?
The strangest posture of affairs.
What, my wife?
No, no, I mean the family. Your lady's affairs may be in a very good posture. I saw her go into the garden with Mr. Brisk.
Well, when? What to do?
I suppose they've been laying their heads together.
How?
Only about poetry, my lord. Making couplets.
Couplets?
Aye, here they come.
My lord, your humble servant. Sir Paul, yours. The finest night.
My dear, Mr. Brisk and I have been stargazing. I don't know how long.
Are not you weary with looking up?
Oh, no. I love it violently. My dear, you're melancholy.
No, my dear. I'm but just awake.
Well, I swear, Mr. Brisk, you understood astronomy like an old Egyptian.
Not comparable to your ladyship. You are the very queen of stars.
That's because I've no light but what's by reflection from you, who are the sun.
Jeez, you, madam. You have eclipsed me quite, let me perish.
Harky, shall you and I make an almanac together?
Oh, with all my soul.
Cynthia, you tell me most surprising things. Bless me. Who would ever trust a man? Oh, my heart aches for fear they should be all deceitful alike.
You need not fear, madam. You have charms to fixing constancy itself.
Oh, dear, you make me blush.
Come, my dear, shall we take leave of my lord and lady?
They'll wait upon your lordship presently.
Mr. Brisk, my coach shall set you down.
Oh, I'm betrayed!
What is it?
Oh, this is my sister, Touchwood. Save me! Help me!
And his lordship.
The Tard is a parson.
Strumpet! Stand off! Let me go! The plagues and curses seize you all!
Go! And thy own infamy pursue thee. You stare as you were all amazed. I don't wonder at it, but too soon you'll know mine and that woman's shame.
Nay, by heaven, you shall be seen!
'Tis Mellifont.
Also attired as a parson.
Dragging along Maskwell, do you take me?
Do you hold down your head?
Yes, Jack Maskwell, I am your chaplain. Look in the face of your injured friend, thou wonder of falsehood!
Are you silent, monster?
Good heavens, how I believed and loved this man. Take him hence, for he's a disease to my sight.
Servants, seize him. Secure that manifold villain.
Miracle of ingratitude.
Oh, Callus, your hand.
This is all very surprising, let me perish.
You know, I told you Saturn looked a little more angry than usual.
We'll think of punishment at leisure. But let me hasten to do justice in rewarding virtue and wrong the innocent. Nephew, I hope I have your pardon, and Cynthia's.
We are your lordship's creatures.
And be each other's comfort. Let me join your hands. Mutual love, lasting health, and circling joys tread round each happy year of your long lives. Tomorrow, we shall dance at your wedding.
The Double Dealer by William Congreve was adapted for radio by Kevin Elliott. Robin Bailey played Lord Touchwood, Sheila Gish was Lady Touchwood, and Jonathan Cullen Mellifont. Clive Swift was Sir Paul Pliant, Penelope Wilton Lady Pliant, Claire Skinner Cynthia, and Christopher Benjamin Lord Froth. Celia Imrie played Lady Froth, Mark Lockyer Brisk, Richard Bonneville Careless, and Robert Glenister played Maskwell. Henry Purcell's music was performed by the New London Consort under the direction of Philip Pickett, and the solo singer was Paul Agnew. Musical supervision and additional music was by Mia Sotiriou. The Double Dealer was directed by Phyllida Lloyd and was an independent production by Catherine Bailey Limited.